Imagine trying to read a book, right? But instead of looking directly at the ink on the page, you're only allowed to look at the microscopic shadows those letters cast.
Right, the shadows on the tiny fibers of the paper,
Yeah.
which sounds, I mean, completely impossible.
Yeah, totally impossible. Maybe even a little absurd. But today we're looking at a radical new physics framework that says this exact, well, backwards approach is how we're going to solve the biggest mysteries in the cosmos.
It really is a massive paradigm shift.
It is. Welcome to the deep dive. Today, for you listening, we're taking the way we search for dark matter and dark energy, and we are just completely flipping the script.
We're talking about stopping the whole process of pointing instruments at things and instead looking at the absolute mess of noise all around them.
Because, I mean, we've spent decades, right? Decades and billions of dollars trying to build better, bigger magnifying glasses to find the invisible.
Oh, absolutely. And the framework we're exploring today essentially argues that this is, well, a philosophical dead end. It says we need to stop hunting for invisible objects directly and start reading the shadows they cast on the ambient light of the universe.
Yeah, and the source material we're pulling from today is, it's intense. We've got a highly theoretical set of notes.
Very theoretical.
Yeah, it's titled Dark Matter Detector Theory.md. And it outlines this completely new mathematical framework called CCT optical gravity.
Which I know sounds like a mouthful.
It does. But this text, it sits right at the intersection of optics, general relativity, and information theory. And our mission today is to unpack it for you without getting bogged down in dense math.
Right, because it sounds incredibly dense on the surface. But the underlying physics, it relies on a mechanism that every single one of us uses constantly.
Literally every single day. Okay, let's unpack this. And to do that, I want to start where the author of these notes starts.
Which isn't in deep space, actually.
No, it's with human biology,
Yeah.
because the biological eye is the foundational analogy for this entire theory, right?
It is, yeah. Think about the mechanics of how human vision actually operates. You've got the pupil, right? It acts like an aperture.
It's like a camera lens.
Exactly like a camera. It takes in the direct light path. So photons traveling straight from a source like a computer screen right onto the fovea at the center of your retina.
And that gives you that focused, high-resolution input.
Right, but your eye is receiving vastly more information than just that direct beam. I mean, there's a massive amount of ambient scattered light bouncing off the walls, the
Just
floor.
all the objects in your periphery.
Yeah, and your peripheral retina captures these deflected photons. Now, to a simple piece of glass, that scatter is just useless noise.
Just a blur.
Exactly. But to your brain's visual cortex, it's vital data. The brain continuously processes that peripheral scatter to reconstruct the full three-dimensional model of the room around you.
Okay, so taking that leap from a human eyeball to astrophysics, how does gravity act like a peripheral retina?
Well, the notes anchor this in a phenomenon known as the gravito-optic effect. They specifically reference an experiment by Lai in 2026.
Okay, what does that experiment show?
Basically, in general relativity, space-time isn't just an empty void. It acts like an optical medium. It possesses a refractive index, much like water or, a thick piece of glass.
So gravity literally bends light.
Gravity literally bends light, and the radical insight of the CCT framework is applying that refractive reality to our actual search methods.
Right, changing how we look.
Yeah. When we look for massive objects in space, the signal we need isn't in the direct, unhindered path of photons. The gravitational signal is actually hidden in the peripheral scatter.
In the deflected ambient light. So
Exactly.
it's like looking at a street lamp in a heavy fog.
Oh, that's a great way to put it.
Standard physics insists on building a better and better telescope to look directly at the bulb, right? Trying to see the filament perfectly through the mist. But this theory says the real information is encoded in the glowing halo of fog around it. The way the light scatters in the mist actually tells you everything you need to know about the environment.
What's fascinating here is that your analogy perfectly captures the physical mechanism of the scatter entropy function outlined in the notes.
The scatter entropy function.
Yeah. Standard astrophysics has historically treated that ambient scattered light in the universe as a nuisance.
Like it's just background static.
Right. Static that gets in the way of observing the real targets, like distant galaxies. But this framework argues that the deflection of ambient photons by gravity is the primary target.
Because every single mass alters the path of photons passing by it.
Precisely. By analyzing the scatter, you can mathematically reverse engineer the mass that caused it.
The same way your brain reconstructs a physical room from the light bouncing off the walls?
Exactly the same principle.
That implies the entire fabric of space is just a giant distorted lens, and we only lack the software to untangle the distortion.
That's the core idea, yes.
Which leads us to the ultimate invisible target, dark matter. Because if you want to find something that fundamentally refuses to interact with light, you have to look at how its sheer weight messes with the light passing near it.
Right, and standard physics already tries to do this. But the old approach sounds, well, incredibly clunky compared to this.
How so?
Well, the standard approach requires incredibly specific conditions. Dark matter only interacts via gravity, right? So traditional astronomy tries to detect it by looking for massive gravitational lensing events.
We build these enormous telescopes.
Huge telescopes. And we basically wait for a massive clump of dark matter to pass perfectly between our viewpoint and a bright, distant galaxy.
Just so we can photograph the galaxy's light physically warping around the dark matter?
Exactly. It's a waiting game.
It's like trying to find a perfectly clear, bowling ball-sized glass sphere sitting in the middle of a brightly lit room. You can't see the glass itself.
No, you can't.
So your only strategy is to stare at a specific light bulb and wait until the invisible sphere rolls exactly in front of it to see the distortion. You're relying entirely on a lucky alignment.
Which is incredibly inefficient.
Mm.
But the CCT optical gravity framework, specifically the CCTOAE part of it.
Wait, what does ODE stand for again?
It stands for Continuous Collapse Theory via Ordinary Differential Equations.
Right, okay.
It abandons that waiting game completely. It treats dark matter detection not as passive observation, but as an active algorithm.
An active algorithm?
Yeah, it plays a highly structured cosmic game of 20 questions with the surrounding universe.
Okay, I want to dig into the mechanics of this algorithm because it absolutely blew my mind when I read it.
It's brilliant.
The notes explain that the algorithm generates a matrix of 100 specific questions about the mass distribution in any given area of space. And it ranks these questions using a metric called the delta over W ratio.
Right, the delta over W ratio. So yeah. Delta represents the collapse potential.
Meaning what exactly?
In information theory, this means how much entropy or uncertainty is reduced by answering the question.
Got it. And the W?
W stands for the work cost. So the literal amount of computing power or sensor energy required to process the data to get the answer.
So it's basically looking for the highest possible return on investment.
Exactly.
If you think about how a search engine algorithm filters useless data to find what you want, it doesn't read the whole internet top to bottom every single time.
No, that would take forever.
It asks the broadest, most eliminating questions first to save processing power.
And that's exactly what this does. The notes highlight question 021 in the matrix as the critical question.
Question 021.
Right. It asks, is there gravitational scatter from a region with absolutely no electromagnetic emission?
Okay.
The text identifies this as having maximum collapse potential.
Meaning, if you answer it, you eliminate a ton of uncertainty.
Precisely. If the software identifies an area where ambient light is bending inward, but our traditional telescopes see absolutely zero light source there, the entropy collapses. You have confirmed the presence of dark matter.
Wait, hold on. Let me push back on this a bit because I'm struggling with the sheer scale here.
Sure.
Ambient light is literally everywhere in space, right? Photons are constantly bouncing off billions of galaxies, nebulas, dust clouds.
Amount of light.
Isn't that scatter just an infinitely chaotic soup of noise? I mean, my laptop fan sounds like a jet engine if I have too many browser tabs open.
Yeah, I know the feeling.
So how does a computer process the optical noise of the entire universe without requiring like infinite computing energy?
Well, that's where the energy economy of the CCTOD theory comes in. It's designed specifically to prevent that kind of computational meltdown.
Okay, how?
The system does not attempt to process all the background noise simultaneously. It begins exclusively with cheap data.
Cheap data, so broad strokes.
Exactly. It scans broad peripheral scatter patterns first, asking those high delta over W questions. This is where the ordinary differential equations come into play.
The ODE part.
Right. They model the continuous gradual change of the light paths. As the algorithm filters the broad strokes, the mathematical uncertainty, the entropy begins to collapse.
That's it's narrowing things down.
Continuously.
Huh.
The software narrows down the possible shapes of the mass, causing the distortion. It only spends expensive processing power on high-resolution data, once the cheap questions have chiseled away the vast majority of the noise.
It's sculpting.
Sculpting. I like that.
It's taking a massive block of static and chipping away everything that isn't a gravitational footprint until the exact mass distribution of the dark matter is the only mathematical shape left standing.
That's exactly it. And the physical mechanism driving this entire mathematical process is convergence.
Convergence.
Dark matter has mass, therefore it exerts a gravitational pull. It bends light inward toward a center point.
Like a magnifying glass.
Yes. It creates a focusing effect in the refractive index of spacetime. And the math in the notes represents this focusing as the gradient of the refractive index being greater than zero.
Okay, so if we've established that every mass bends light inward, creating a focal point out of the ambient noise, what happens to the math when we look at the exact opposite force?
Ah, right.
What happens when we apply the scatter equation to the cosmic voids where space is actively expanding and tearing things apart?
Then we enter the dark energy inversion.
The inverse.
Dark energy under this framework is treated as the mathematical inverse of dark matter.
Okay.
Where dark matter attracts, focuses, and causes convergence. Dark energy repels, defocuses, and causes divergence.
Divergence.
Right. In those ODE equations, dark energy is represented by a gradient of less than zero. It forces light paths to spread outward.
Here's where it gets really interesting. The text refers to this specifically as the anti-scatter concept.
The anti-scatter, yeah.
So if dark matter is a cosmic magnifying glass pulling ambient light down to a tight focal point, dark energy is like a funhouse mirror constantly stretching the image outward, pulling the light apart.
Keep that funhouse mirror visual in mind, because it perfectly illustrates the entropy. Dark matter causes the scatter entropy to collapse towards zero as the light converges on a mass.
Right.
But dark energy makes the scatter entropy increase globally. As the universe accelerates its expansion, the paths of ambient photons diverge more and more.
So the uncertainty goes up.
It goes way up. The entropy continues to increase until it hits a ceiling, a state the theory calls the De Sitter equilibrium.
A De Sitter equilibrium. What does that actually look like physically?
Physically, it's a state where the universe is expanding so aggressively that light paths are stretched to their maximum possible divergence.
It's pulled totally apart.
Yeah. The fog of ambient light we've been talking about is pulled apart until it becomes a uniform, unreadable static. The mathematical uncertainty maximizes and stabilizes.
Okay, measuring a focal point of dark matter makes sense to me. But how do you actually measure a funhouse mirror that is the size of the entire universe? I mean, you can't just isolate a single spot of missing mass.
You can. And the author details a brilliant experimental test to measure this. You don't look at a single object. You measure the physical gap between objects over vast stretches of time.
The gap between them.
Right. The experiment uses pairs of distant quasars. These are incredibly bright, active galactic cores.
Okay.
You find pairs that sit at the exact same redshift, meaning they are located at the exact same distance from Earth. Then you measure the angular separation between the photon streams arriving from those two quasars over time.
So you are watching to see if the physical distance between their light beams changes as they travel toward us?
Exactly. If the universe were completely dominated by matter, gravity would eventually pull those two light paths toward each other.
So the measured gap between them would shrink.
It would shrink, yes.
Mm-hmm.
However, if dark energy is driving the cosmos, the actual metric of space between the light beams is expanding.
Ah.
This expansion forces the photon paths to spread apart faster than gravity can pull them together. We detect the dark energy signal when we observe those photons diverging significantly more than a standard matter-only model dictates.
Wow. If we connect this to the bigger picture, this means we aren't actually looking for a thing called dark energy at all, are we? We aren't hunting for a new exotic particle or some invisible fluid.
No, we are measuring the active divergence of space itself. This represents a massive philosophical shift in astrophysics.
It's huge.
We are no longer hunting for elusive substances hiding in the dark. We are reading the behavioral changes in the light that is already attempting to travel through the dark.
Mm.
Under this theory, dark energy is simply the label we apply to the anomalous divergence of ambient photons.
That is a staggering way to view reality. But, you know, theory is beautiful, but it's just math on a page until it survives contact with real data.
Right.
And the most mind-blowing section of these notes is the final part, where the author moves out of theoretical physics and actually builds a unified simulation to test this framework against the real universe.
Yeah, the paper transitions into high-level applied data science here. The author coded a simulation that combines the dark matter convergence equations and the dark energy divergence equations into one single unified detector model.
And they didn't just run this on clean, simulated laboratory data. They fed this algorithm some of the most complex, messy observational data ever collected by humanity.
Real data.
Yeah, the notes specify they used the Planck 2018 Cosmic Microwave Background data, the BISS Baryon Acoustic Oscillation data, and the DES Supernova data.
It's important to understand why those specific data sets are crucial for a theory based on optical scatter.
Right, break that down for us.
The Planck 2018 data is essentially a map of the ultimate cosmic fog. It's the oldest scattered microwave light from the very birth of the universe. The BISS-BAO data maps out physical ripples in the distribution of galaxies, creating a structural baseline of how matter clumped together. And the DES supernova data provides incredibly precise distance measurements for the expanding universe.
And standard cosmology usually analyzes these data sets completely separately, right? Using weak lensing techniques for the dark matter maps and tracking the supernovae to measure dark energy.
Exactly. But the CCT algorithm ingests all of it simultaneously. It applies the scatter entropy function to the entire cosmic data budget at once.
All at the same time.
Yeah. The simulation maps the dark matter by locating the zones where the entropy collapses into a focal point. At the same time, it characterizes the dark energy by finding the exact rate at which the entropy...
Basically, when we use the early universe data, like the Planck microwave background, to measure how fast the universe is expanding, we get one number. But when we use late universe data, like supernova, we get a significantly faster number.
And they do not match.
They don't match. Standard physics is practically tearing its hair out trying to fix this discrepancy. So how does this entropy algorithm handle a massive physical contradiction in the data?
This is perhaps the most elegant feature of the entire CCT optical gravity framework.
Yeah.
In standard physics, the Hubble tension is viewed as a frustrating anomaly, a bug in our understanding of the universe.
Right.
But the CCT framework categorizes the tension as question Q012 in the algorithm, a high delta question.
Meaning it has massive collapse potential.
Yes. The discrepancy isn't a bug. It's a feature of the refractive index of space-time changing over billions of years.
Oh, wow.
The algorithm analyzes the physical disagreement between the early and late universe expansion rates. Instead of failing to compute, it recognizes that tension as a highly efficient guide.
So it uses it.
It uses it. The tension itself serves as a high-value data point that rapidly eliminates incorrect mathematical models of how dark energy evolved. The software uses the physical contradiction to optimize its search path, vastly reducing the processing power needed to find the correct model.
So what does this all mean? If an algorithm can take existing data sets from older satellites, run thermodynamics-based scatter math on them, and map both dark matter and dark energy simultaneously, all while using the Hubble tension as a shortcut, do we stop building billion-dollar space telescopes?
That's a big question.
Can we just build better software and run it on the data we already have sitting on hard drives?
Well, we absolutely still need hardware. The entire foundation of the CCT framework relies on capturing the peripheral scatter of photons.
We still need the raw data.
We need incredibly sensitive instruments to gather that faint ambient light. We need the massive data streams from projects like the DES surveys to feed the algorithm's hunger for broad data.
So the hardware is still necessary, but the design philosophy changes.
Completely. The paradigm of how we build those telescopes completely shifts. We no longer need to design instruments solely to stare at microscopic patches of the sky, hoping to catch a perfect, high-resolution image of a gravitational lens.
Right. No more waiting game.
Exactly. We need telescopes specifically designed to read the statistical optical noise of the entire sky at once.
Just scooping up the scatter.
Yeah. The philosophical goal changes from look directly for the massive object to look at the scatter where there is no visible source. Future instruments will be optimized to capture maximum entropy data rather than maximum resolution images.
It's the difference between buying a high-powered narrow rifle scope and deploying a massive wide-angle net. You're trying to catch the broad currents and patterns in the ocean of light, not shoot one specific fish.
I love that. And by casting that wide net, the energy and time costs of astronomical discovery plummet. You're allowing the universe to do the heavy lifting.
Because it's already doing it.
Right. The gravity of these invisible objects is already actively bending the light. You just have to build a net that can read the distortion.
If you're listening to this and you want a takeaway to apply to your own life or work, this journey from the biology of the human eye to mapping the invisible architecture of the cosmos, It's the ultimate lesson in problem solving.
It really is.
We spend so much of our time banging our heads against the wall, trying to look harder, closer, and more intensely at our direct targets. But sometimes the breakthrough doesn't come from upgrading your magnifying glass.
No, it doesn't.
The breakthrough comes from learning how to read the peripheral noise that you've been tuning out this whole time.
Recognizing that the negative space around an object contains just as much vital information as the object itself is a powerful shift in perspective.
Yeah.
And that shift raises a final profound question that extends far beyond deep space astronomy.
Oh. Where does this math take us next?
Well, the mathematics underpinning the CCT framework are universal. The equations apply to space-time and refractive indices everywhere, regardless of scale.
Regardless of scale.
Right. So if every massive object in the universe leaves a unique scatter entropy fingerprint on ambient light, what happens when we apply this exact same algorithm to incredibly small scales?
Wait, how small are we talking?
Human scale.
Wait, really?
Yeah. Could this thermodynamics algorithm, running on highly sensitive optical sensors, eventually be used to detect the gravitational signature of a single human being?
That's wild.
Imagine mapping the exact mass and position of a person purely by calculating how their gravitational pull imperceptibly warps the ambient light scattering from a standard desk lamp in a small office.
Okay, that thought is going to keep me up at night. The idea that my physical gravitational footprint is currently altering the light bouncing off the walls of this room, and that a piece of software could read that distortion.
It's a lot to think about.
That is science fiction becoming engineering. Thank you for coming along on this deep dive. Keep your eyes open, and remember to look at the scatter in your own world. It might be trying to show you something massive.